Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing the truly wonderful Vandana Shah. Vandana is an award-winning lawyer, author, columnist, and social entrepreneur based in Mumbai, India, with the most amazing story. The BBC documentary Invisible Women of India is based on her story. She is the author of the bestseller X-Files, which is now part of the Judicial College syllabus in India. Her work as a social entrepreneur has been lauded by Gloria Steinem, who also endorsed Vandana's book. As a result of her books and her work, Vandana has spoken at various literary festivals and appears on many panel discussions. She is a regular contributing columnist on law, women, empowerment for the Huffington Post. Hello, Vandana. Thank you so much for being interviewed all the way in Mumbai via Skype. It's truly wonderful to see you again because we can see each other on Skype. We met when I was over in Mumbai in March this year. So it's lovely to see you again. And thank you so much for being interviewed.
Thank you very much. And I'm just happy to see you and you're enjoying the beautiful weather there. We can't say the same about India here.
Yeah, a pretty horrendous heat wave you're having at the moment. I just think you're all longing for the monsoon, aren't you, out there?
Yes, that's right.
So tell us more about your story. I mean, I found that fascinating, the BBC documentary Invisible Women of India. Can you tell us more about that?
First up, Kitty, thank you so much for thinking my work worthy to be interviewed. I'm really grateful for that. You know, because it is an ongoing battle every day to prove your worth, not only to yourself, but even to the outside world. Because in India, you have to remember that we are a patriarchal society.
Yeah.
And even though on paper, the working women's population is now on an average 20% of the women are working women. And these are statistics, you know, which look at working women, essentially women who are working outside the house. Mm-hmm. They don't look at women who come and do your work at home.
Ah, you know? Okay. So, right.
Yes. You know, so otherwise it would probably be around 30 to 35% of the women in India are working. But we are still struggling against a patriarchal society. Mm. And the BBC documentary essentially speaks about that. My story is, it started about 10, 15 years ago. And I was married in this extremely rich industrialist family. Mm-hmm. And, well, things didn't go right. That's putting it euphemistically.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, because I didn't fit in their mold. Now, see, there is a mold for a wife. And there is a mold for a daughter-in-law in India.
Right.
And mold for a wife is you get married. If you get married into a rich family, you don't need to work. If you work, you essentially just work as an extended identity of your husband or his family business.
Right.
And of course, the daughter-in-law mold is, I think that's a universal mold everywhere. You know, you walk into the house and you should know exactly what is right and what is wrong. You need to understand the way in which the family works. And of course, what will keep your mother-in-law the happiest, that's the daughter-in-law mold. And the marriage barely lasted about a year and a half. And in the middle of the night, one day they decided that I wasn't worth it. And again, using a euphemism, I was asked to leave the house. But the truth of the matter is that they kicked me out of the house at about 2:33 in the morning. And I essentially had nothing with me. And I got down the stairs. And in fact, they were staying in a building. And Now, when I sit back and reflect, it just shows you the entire mindset of people. And you know, I stood below the building asking for help, and no one offered me help, and people just shut their doors and the windows, and you know, they just said, it's between you all, it's between you all,
right?
You know, you are, yeah, essentially meaning me and my ex-in-laws and my ex-husband. And I really took an auto, which is essentially a three-wheeler tuk-tuk,
yeah,
and came back to my, you know, this lady who used to clean my home. And I came back to her, and the only question that she asked me, and she asked me in the local language, saying that, you've come back? I said, yes, I've come back. And she said, see, you should have left the key of the house with me, and at least now you wouldn't be sitting over here. She stays in a small, well, I cannot even call it an apartment. She lives in a slum.
Yeah.
And it's barely... it's barely about 40 square feet, the
right,
entire size of her house, you know. And at that moment, I think that was the only thing I wanted to hear, because I didn't want to hear what has gone wrong, or that you were in the wrong, or that they were such a rich family, so the fault is yours. And those were the most calming words that I heard then.
Yeah.
And, you know, she gave me tea to have, and we sat outside, and, you know, she tried to give me food. And at about 6 in the morning, we opened the door to my house, and we walked in. Essentially, I mean, that was the house that I had before I got married. And, it was, you know, you don't really expect to come back to that house.
Was anybody living in the house? Was it empty or?
Nothing. It was, it had been shut for the past 1.5-2 years,
right,
you know, that I had spent in the marital home. And
right,
I didn't even have money to pay the locksmith, because I just the clothes literally on my back. That's
right,
all that I came with. And in fact, you know, the auto guy, this lady who used to work for us, she gave him the money, because I was just, you know, that's all that I walked out with. And my bank account, essentially, I always say that, you know, I started with the 750 rupees, which is, I think it's not even 10 pounds. You know, is what I think. Yeah, that's 7.5 pounds at the current exchange rate.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what I restarted my life with in that house.
What about your own family, Vandana? Your own parents?
Well, you know, like I said, that the stigma. So I was wrong on all counts,
right,
as per the Indian society.
Okay.
And my family. Firstly, I spoke up against the abuse that I was being put through.
Right.
Secondly, I refused to, you know, just give in to everyone's demands, because I was married in an extremely rich family. And I said, look, life has to be beyond this economic and domestic abuse that I'm being put through.
Mm.
Thirdly, I didn't, you know, the suggestions I got for making the marriage work and to just really shut up about the abuse were, have a child, it'll be fine.
Wow.
You know, and fourthly, you know, how dare you go against them, because they're the ones who are rich, who are powerful, who have everything going for them, and you don't even have, look, I had lost my parents when I was much younger, and
right,
you don't even have parents, and they were kind enough to get married to you without knowing who your parents are, so essentially you need to be indebted to them for life.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. If I think of my mother left my father when I was 9, and she took me with her. So that was 1969. And I can remember my mum and I walking the streets at night with nowhere to live. and nobody would take us in because they viewed us with a huge amount of suspicion. A woman on her own with a child. They had all thoughts going through their mind of what she was, and it wasn't very complimentary, let me tell you. So, you know, nobody wanted to know. You know, it was, as you were saying, shut the doors, shut the windows, try and pretend the problem wasn't there. But that was a generation ago. You know, what I do now, and I take for granted in the Western world as a woman, wasn't even on the radar screen for my mother. And to think that similar, what my mother went through a generation ago, is still happening to women today in other parts of the world, is really, really shocking, because it's really easy to assume that our view of the world is what the whole world looks like, which of course it doesn't. So, you know, to think what you went through is, and I'm sure is still happening.
It is, because, you know, I mean, so my journey started from there, and, you know, I essentially had no money. I had nothing to survive on. The lady who cleans my home, her name is Bobby, and she's the one who cleaned my home, who got me food from her house. And, and you know, when I told her that I'll pay you for this, I mean, you know, she just said, "Oh, you don't have money yourself, and you're going to pay me first. You get your money yourself."
Wow, what an amazing woman she is.
Touch wood. I mean, she just accepted me in a completely non-judgmental manner. And, you know, at that stage, that is all that you're looking for. You're just looking for a little love, support, and no judgment, because you really need to get back on your feet. And, you know, I started looking for jobs immediately, because I really had no money except that 750 rupees in my bank account, which wasn't going to last long. And, you know, the first couple of jobs I was turned down because they felt that, you know, I look too rich. This is Citibank.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And they felt I wouldn't be able to work, you know, so I didn't look like I needed the money. And, you know, and then I got a job with an NGO.
Right.
And that's when I at least started getting back on my feet, you know. So it's extremely important, you know, that at that stage, the money, of course, was important. But what was even more important is somebody not turning around and tell you that you're horrible.
Yeah.
All the time, all that I heard, and in my book, X-Files, my most scathing chapter is on relatives. Because I just say, all I heard was that I was an idiot.
Wow.
For giving up the rights of being in such a rich family, you know, that I had to be a fool, you know, and that I was horrible. I would amount to nothing. Everybody at that stage kept on telling me, you know what, you're going to die alone.
Wow.
And it's and at that stage, that is not what you want to hear. You know, at least there could have been some level of acceptance, some level of, you don't have to endorse what I did, but at least a kind word would have really helped, you know.
How old were you when all of this happened?
I was only 26.
Wow. So young.
You know. And I mean, at least now I can speak about it, because it's about 15 years ago, and, you know, and I've written a book. I keep on writing, you know, so it is out of my system.
Yeah.
But at that stage, I mean, it was just, you are all alone in this world. And I think somewhere along the line, that's when the idea started coming to me that there are so many people like me. You know, who are going through similar situations, and you know, what would they do? So about 2 or 3 years after this incident happened, you know, I started India's first support group for people going through divorce.
Right. Amazing.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes. know, and it's called 360 Degrees Back to Life, because,
Great title.
I just said that you start, you know, you start at zero, because that's what they make you feel like, a zero.
Yeah.
Your marriage has failed, you're a zero.
Yeah.
You know, so you start at zero, you go through life's experiences, and you come out 360 degrees, and then you can follow your own path.
Mm.
You know, so... This started about 2 or 3 years into my situation, and you know, so for over 10 years we ran this group pretty actively, you know, so we counseled about 10 to 13,000 people.
Wow.
In 10 years.
Wow.
Touch wood, you know. Yeah, so it's, I think sometimes, you know, the best way to forget your sorrow is really share someone else's sorrow, you know. And I can say that it's not just a slogan from me, because I think I forgot about all what I was going through by starting the support group and talking to people and offering them support. Essentially, the support was that, look, it's not all bad. And it's okay. You know, what was lacking and what is still lacking about people going through divorce in India is that there is this whole baggage and cartloads and carton loads of judgment which come with it.
Yeah.
So,
What happens to women? Are women able to instigate divorce, or is it still very much something that is put upon them by the husband?
It is, you know, there are the rough statistics in the family courts which prove that about 60 to 70% of the divorces are initiated by men.
Right.
You know, that is a huge number.
It is.
You know, you're talking about two-thirds of the divorces being initiated by men, and only one-third of them being initiated by the women.
And do you think that's down to the fear of the women of what is actually going to happen to them? So it's almost the lesser of two evils, is to stay in a bad situation, because they know the alternative, there is no support, there is this stigma. How are they going to rebuild their lives? So if you're kind of weighing up, it's almost the better the devil you know.
Exactly. And also, Katie, the financial trauma.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I speak a lot about telling women that please don't do what I did. You know, I was a young, educated girl, you know, with a father who encouraged us to work, and you know, always telling us that, you know, I mean, till very long, I always say my father was the first feminist we ever met.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
And he used to always say, oh, you know, my mom used to initially say, oh, you know, but they're good-looking girls, they'll get married. He said, that's all right, but they need to study and they need to work. You know, and for very long we didn't know that there is a preference for the boy child in India. You know, so you know, so I mean, he always told us that, okay, you know, you're all equal and you all are my princesses, and we grew up thinking that way. And in fact, the first time I encountered it was at my cousin's place, and you know, it was summer season, and we had come to Mumbai for the vacations, and he got extra mango milkshake. You know, which is a big deal when you are 7 years old. Mango milkshake makes your world rock.
Absolutely.
You know, and he said that, you know, I'm getting it more because my grandmom said that boys always get more and girls always get less.
Wow.
You see that 7 year old, well, he's 1 year older than me, so he was 8, I was 7. And he said, so because girls always get less, because boys are better. I said, no,
wow.
My dad said, girls and boys are the same and everyone gets equal. You know, so this whole thing, anyways, it you know, I wrote to my dad, and before that, I just said, no, my dad said this. And well, I ended up, you know, hitting him and saying, you give me the mango milkshake.
it's that stereotyping that happens at such a young age, isn't it? You know, if that's fed into the subconscious of children at such a young age, how on earth do you, I mean, it's like trying to turn around a tanker, you know, I mean, it takes a tanker 5 miles to stop, you know, and to turn it around, you know, kind of takes 24 hours. How do you even begin to change this ingrained, embedded attitude?
You know, because it's, and this is the upper middle class that I'm speaking about.
Yeah.
So there's this whole huge middle class, there's the lower class, it's there everywhere, it's all pervasive.
Mm.
And you know, see, when I wrote to my dad and he wrote back to me, even in that letter as a joke, when I asked him, he never said that you're unequal. He just said, let him have more because you are a guest in the house.
Ah.
So there was no question of even then my dad telling me, no, you are lesser than the guy, you know.
Mm.
And of course, he told me, and you're not to beat up your cousin, you know. So
try not to hit him again.
You know, but it just, you know, and you grow up and you see, and you see my cousin's attitude hasn't changed. He made his wife give up her job.
Wow.
He got married, he made his wife, who was with a media channel, he made her give up the job because he said women in our families don't work. So
wow.
You see what is the impetus and the input that he's getting all the time is what you're doing is absolutely right.
Mm.
So how will women ever grow?
Mm.
And then I go out there and I say, look, I don't want to be a victim of this domestic abuse where I'm told all the time that you are just pathetic.
Mm.
Everything that you do is wrong.
Mm.
You know, you are, you should be thankful that we got married to you. And I write this in my book that, you know, I mentioned that, you know, sometimes the wounds are so bad that you just say that, they should start a new beauty line for women going through abuse because they'll make a killing out of it, you know. And it just has to be condemned. It has to stop. But where do you start?
Where do you start? So, yeah.
You know, when it's when you have all these little reminders that, you know, you are the unequal gender, you know, and in India, I say that women are the first one. It's like, you know, in a job, if you're hired last and the company is shutting down, you're the first to go.
Mm.
But in India, you're the first to sacrifice. Women are always asked to sacrifice first. And the last to get anything, you know. So there is never any security which is given to women, because the belief is that, you know, if you make us secure, we'll understand our value.
Right.
You know.
It's coming from fear, isn't it? Really. I mean, all of this is coming from fear. Any kind of abuse, anywhere in the world, its core is based in fear. Fear of the perpetrator. And how do we tackle that? Because, you know, violence against women globally is such an appalling issue. How do we even begin to change that mindset around the world?
You know, it has to essentially start at home and in schools. So, you know, a while ago, I was asked to speak on a platform which talks about preventing abuse against women in context with the Nirbhaya case in India.
Yeah.
You know, and I just said that, you know, the mothers have to do it at home and the teachers have to do it at school, and you have to do it at a younger age.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like you gave the example of the trailer, you can't turn the trailer back after going down 5 miles. You can't really turn it back. It's too late.
It's too late.
You know, our narratives have to change. And, you know, like I have a stepson, you know, and for him now to even think of speaking against women it will never be accepted or tolerated.
Yeah.
You know, and he knows that. So now that is a part, because it is intrinsic in our home now.
Yeah.
That, you know, that that women are not unequal to men.
Yeah.
And this is a conservative Gujarati business family.
Mm.
You know, so the minute you start taking and changing the rules in this setup, you know that you've made a change.
Yeah.
I see him gravitating towards people who have single moms.
Mm.
And those single moms are now working, and their sons are saying that what you did for us and our dad couldn't give you, you know, some of them have started restaurants for their moms, and they are running the restaurants with them, you know, the tiny mom and pop shop restaurants. But it's a start, you know.
So what about women in India who do get divorced? What happens to their ability to remarry? Is there a stigma about getting involved with a divorced woman?
Absolutely, you know, because the thing is that, you see, you always, in India, I mean, virginity is still still the most prized possession.
Right.
So, you know, the minute you, in this day and age, you know, so... So the minute you're married, you know, the obvious assumption is that, you know, when you're not a virgin anymore, so it's kind of like you have a depreciated value.
Yeah.
So you should basically just marry whoever will marry you. And then there's always the women have the fear that what about the children?
Right. Yeah.
The fear is also who will accept my children and love them in the same way that I do.
Yes.
You know, so the society, I mean, you're talking about remarriage. I am still talking about people still meet me on occasions and they don't want to speak about divorce. They use euphemisms for divorce, saying that, you know, I have a situation in my house. You know, we're still not talking and saying that, look, this is an epidemic which is spreading.
Yeah.
And it is spreading. I mean, today, Katie, when I go to the family court versus when I started my journey in the family court as a litigant, and, you know, which was around around 10 years ago, you know, there were only 30 matters on board, sometimes 20 to 25 matters on board. We have 7 floors. Okay. So you do the math.
Mm.
You know, that's about 150 to 175 matters on board.
Mm.
Today, when I go, there are 90 matters on board.
Mm.
90?
Mm.
So you're looking at almost a 4 times growth.
Yeah. Wow.
In 10 years, that is a huge amount.
It is.
And we are still talking about divorce being a situation. No, it's not a situation. You know, these are things which are happening.
Mm.
And these are the things that, you know, we try to bring about from our support group that, you know, look, it's okay.
Mm.
You know, it's not the end of the world. Just because you failed in marriage, and I'm using the term failed because people still use a marriage failure as a generalization to being a complete failure in life.
It's interesting, you know, I married and divorced twice, both in my 20s. So by the time I was 31, I'd been married and divorced twice. And I can remember sitting there thinking, okay, that was an interesting decade. What was that about? what was going on there in my life? Anyway, and that's when I started my personal development journey of looking at why that happened and why I made the decisions that I did. And I was really, really clear. And I also what I needed to heal within myself so that I attracted different relationships and different experiences into my life. But what I realized and what I made a conscious decision at that point was I would never, ever say I have 2 failed marriages. And how I position it is that I was lucky enough to extricate myself successfully from 2 negative situations that weren't healthy for me. I've never ever seen myself as a failure, ever. I would have seen myself as a failure if I'd stayed there.
Oh, fantastic. I just wish, you know, we had more women like you and me who would actually turn around and say this and say that, look, that was something that happened. It was just an experience. I learned from it and I moved on.
Yeah.
But, you know, the society in India doesn't let you move on.
No, that's the thing.
People in India get uncomfortable, my relatives get uncomfortable if I speak about my first marriage, because they feel it should, now that everything is okay, don't talk about that. No, that was an important decade in my life because, you know, I entered the family court as when I was 26, 27. By the way, even my husband, my ex-husband initiated the divorce. So, you know, your previous question, who's the initiator? It's usually the man. You know, and you know, I set up this support group. You know, I became a counselor. You know, we were running this for 10 years without any funds. We were doing it because of our own grit and determination. You know, I started writing because of the support group. For Christ's sake, I took up law because my divorce case was taking 10 years. You know,
Jesus. 10 years.
10 years. To get a divorce. So I said, well, I think it's time for me to start studying law. So, you know, in one sense, I look at that entire experience as shaping my entire course of life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I became a writer because I was going through a divorce. I became a counselor because I was going through a divorce. I started studying law. You know, I finished my law. I'm practicing in the family court because of that one experience.
Yeah.
And I made these friends for life. Like, I have these women in my support group, you know, who are my friends for life. I just have to pick up the phone and tell them, look, I'm coming to America. I was in America recently. And she said, there's no question you are staying in my house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she's doing amazing work with the consulate, and she said, you know, anytime you need anything, I am there for you. Mm. You know, so you made these bonds, Katie, and you have to understand that these bonds are very difficult in India, because in India your family comes first and everything else comes 99 steps down the line.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was the other way around. So everybody started saying, oh, you know, I don't know how you being in India did that. But I think it was just survival. Mm. And it was also just acceptance of a basic truth that, look, you need to have friends who are non-judgmental. Mm. I was not getting that from my family. Mm. I was not getting that from my relatives. And, you know, I mean, that is the absolute truth, that, you know, you need people in a tough situation.
Okay, so we're back. We had a slight blip in the internet connection there, and as Vandana was saying, the divorce is too painful for the internet to cope with. But anyway, we're back online now. We'll carry on. When I was in Mumbai earlier this year, and I was working with a group of women, I was saying, you are the 21st century suffragettes. And they went, oh, yes, we can cope with that. Is that how you see yourself? Because, you know, if I think back to the early 1900s and you think of Emmeline Pankhurst and, you know, tying themselves to the railings just to get women the vote in the UK and North America, it's kind of what women in India are doing now. It's that level of determination to have a voice, isn't it?
That's true. And, you know, the thing is that what's funny is that in some levels, India is so far ahead.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it, I mean, traditionally, women in India have been working all the time, you know, and they've been adding all these little incomes to their house. You know, by let's say you cook at home and you supply 30 boxes to someone, you know, so that is an additional income at home.
Why?
But this absolute derecognition of the contribution of women, you know, that's only actually happened in the past 40 years.
Right.
You know, where as though to have any identity, you must have only one identity with the husband. If you look at our freedom movement also, women have been pretty much at the forefront of things.
Right.
It's only, I think, immediately after the independence, there was a slight shift and no one knew how to go about it. So, you know, this extreme derecognition of women. But now things are changing. You know, women are saying that, look, you need to listen to what I'm doing. And I'm happy. You know, a lot of people say that what is the difference between saying that you're a housewife versus saying that you're a homemaker?
Wow.
You
interesting.
Know? So it's, I just say that, you know, just a difference in the label,
yeah,
it makes the woman feel extremely good about herself,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so when you have these positive narratives happening, it makes you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, if you see a homemaker's job as is probably the worst. I mean, I remember we used to come back home and say, okay, give me food now. Okay, now I'm tired. Can you help me to sleep? I'm hungry again. Our moms were there for us all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, this changing of the labels, it just makes you feel good about yourself. Women have been doing a lot of good things. It's just that, you know, there is no emphasis on all the work that we've done. There's no recognition. But in the 21st century, women are getting up and saying, look, I don't care if you brand me, if you give me, you know, when I was speaking with you, Katie, I said, if you become too assertive, you get all the negative labels.
Yeah.
You know, no one will ever say that you're assertive. Oh, she's too aggressive.
Yes, absolutely. Men are assertive, women are aggressive when the behavior is identical. Yeah. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Not exclusive to India, let me tell you. We get that over here as well. I mean, what was really interesting, when we were in India early this year, and we were having a conversation with a very, very big Indian corporate, and the man that I was speaking with, I said, you know, I'm still amazed that in the 21st century, there is still only the phrase, the working mother. And not the working father, or the working parent. It is still the assumption that parenthood is the woman's 100% responsibility, and that fatherhood begins and ends at conception. Actually, guys, no, it doesn't. It is parenting is a joint role. And what was really interesting, I said that back in November when we met with this company, and in March he said that's the one thing, Katie, that really struck me, and that I still remember. Actually, why do we still say the working mother? Parenting is a dual role. And this is an Indian man. And it really made him stop and think. So, you know, things are changing. They are moving. But actually, I can remember going around Gandhi's house in Mumbai when we were there nearly a year ago, in July last year. And a lot of quotes from Gandhi. And he was very, very pro-women.
Absolutely. You know, so we've had, that's what I said, that's why women were an integral part of the freedom movement.
Yeah.
And you know, you talk to a lot of men at an individual level, I think a lot of them, if the women put their foot down, they are pretty progressive. And I'm saying that women should put their foot down. You know, it's only that when they're in a group, then the negative labeling starts, which I'm not comfortable with at all.
Right.
You know? And which most women should actually, why don't most women also just get up and say, look, don't call me that.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of women are just because you want to be popular and you want to be liked and you know, you just want to be with the crowd. You just don't ever turn around and say, then don't say that to me.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't actually, the men never put up with it. But I am not in competition with the men. I am just, you know, want to ally with everybody and work towards equality.
Yeah.
You know, so if you think that, you know, talking about my looks gives you an edge over me, go ahead and do that, you know, but don't demean me and just write me off because of my looks or because of my intelligence. You know, these are the kind of conversations that I'm having with women.
Yeah.
And even I keep coming back to the support group because, you know, we changed the lives of so many women with that support group. And that's what's shown in the documentary, because in the BBC documentary, what the Invisible Women of India essentially speaks about is that, you know, women people who are making a difference in fields where everybody is saying, let's go in this direction, and these women are going in the opposite direction. Like for me, a bad marriage is a very bad thing, but divorce is not a bad thing. You know, which is what I say in the documentary, and which is why I say that that this negative labeling of a divorcee and the assumptions which come with it, you know, they should be done away with. And I don't say pity me because I am going through a divorce. I just say, okay, let's work towards rebuilding our lives and restarting our lives, and maybe this bad episode is just the starting point for a new life. You know, which are the things which very few women in India are talking about, because for them divorce is, I mean, even now, you know, a divorce lawyer's profession in India is kind of, especially if women are doing it, it's kind of met with a combination of derision and, you know, this fake jocular behavior that, you know, you're a divorce lawyer, and you know, don't invite her to your wedding, she's a divorce lawyer, and all you know. So it's that kind of an attitude towards it. You know, so these are the things I speak about in the documentary, and I say that, look, these are things that we are doing. We've rebuilt our lives. Divorce is not such a bad thing. What is bad is the labeling. What is bad is the non-acceptance. And what is bad is that when you start blaming them, it was a bad marriage, it got over, move on.
You mentioned you mentioned you have a stepson. Does that mean you've remarried?
Yes, I've remarried.
Ah, fantastic. You know?
Yes. Which is, again, you know, people look at me and they say, oh, but we didn't think, you don't look married, so I don't know, Katie, when you met me, did I look married? So I'm not very sure, you know. And then later...
Is that because you look happy?
But I also understand that, you know, if you don't look married, also means with the kind of work that I do, it also means that, you know, I speak very openly about women empowerment. I speak very openly about failed marriages, you know, and I speak very openly and say that, look, men and women are equal. And for them to comprehend that a man would let alone tolerate it, they would even encourage it, is that's why they say, oh, I think, yeah, we didn't think that you were married.
Interesting.
You know, so it's, you know, when you go into that, and then you understand, because a couple of women, they turn around and tell me that, oh, but you know, I didn't think your husband would support it. So again, this whole thing of let's put it under the carpet, and that you know, nothing has happened to me, and I'm still this whole emphasis on I'm still pure as snow kind of a thing. You know, I mean, I don't get that. So these are the kind of things that, you know, we are still fighting against and try to make a difference, you know. And I must say that I'm very happy with my writing, because I've I must share with you that initially when I started writing, so you want an article on divorce, but you don't want me to write the term divorce.
Okay.
So you want to use euphemisms like, you know, it didn't work out, or, you know, things were not right, you know. So for four of the publications that I write for, I absolutely refused. I said, no, divorce is divorce is divorce. There is no euphemism for it, you know. So after a lot of hee-haw, it went through. So now at least I write about divorce quite openly. So I look at that as one change at a societal level that I'm bringing about. You know, even my book X-Files, there is no doubt in anyone's mind that X X-Files means about divorce. There is no, you know, or about a, about change in relationship status. You know, so at least I'm speaking about it openly. Nowadays, people do introduce me as she is a divorce lawyer and she is doing a social entrepreneurial activity related to divorce. There are still a few, you know, those kind of like, you know, did I just hear that? But at least there is some progression, and I without, you know, saying that I'm the only one who's doing it, I still feel that at least I had the guts to say, look, it's a divorce. It is not a situation. Yes, I was married to the man. Yes, we did sleep together. I am sorry, I am not a virgin anymore, but it happened, and now I have put my life together. Once again, I'm on my feet, and I have remarried, and you know, so there is a happy ending after a bad marriage, which is the conversation I'm trying to bring to the forefront. That it's okay, you know. So I mean, of course, you still have the odd derisive comment, like, you know, don't tell her, you know, she may cause a marriage to break. So I said, don't worry, you know, it's not like touching me will break your marriage. It's okay, you know.
So you have some kind of curse you're carrying along with you. So anybody who talks to you, but we're going back to fear, aren't we? Yeah. So what does the future hold for you? What is it that you want to go out and still achieve?
Well, you know, I definitely want to continue writing books, you know, not only necessarily about divorce. My next book is on Buddhism. So in the next 3 days, I'm leaving to meet His Holiness Dalai Lama.
Wow, how amazing.
Thank you. I will be spending 3 days with him and discussing Buddhism and talking about my new book.
Amazing.
So touch, but I think I'm really blessed there.
Yeah, truly blessed. Amazing, man.
Thank you. And I want to continue writing more about divorce, create an awareness that there is life after a bad marriage, that you don't have to be stuck in a bad marriage. You know, I'd also like to you know, go ahead and look at various aspects of divorce and, you know, remove the stigma around divorce and say that, look, it is not a stigma. Get real, get moving. We are a country of 1.3 billion people, and we need to get rid of this stigma. Yeah. And, you know, part of removing that stigma is also working on judicial reforms.
Yeah.
You know, so I've started a little movement there. It's still at the formative stage, that how to remove, by going into the online space, how to remove the stigma around divorce and how to bring about judicial reforms is, you know, the two spaces that I'm working on, because online is where you need to be.
Yeah.
But judicial reforms, unfortunately, they can't be outsourced. So, you know, it takes time, isn't it?
It's going back to that tanker again. It's going to take time. But I think one of the great things about, certainly what I believe, is that, like, I will always vote. I will absolutely always vote, because not to vote for me is disrespecting my female ancestors who fought so hard to allow me to have the vote. And it's absolutely part of my responsibility as a woman in the world today to honour all the work they have done before me. But it's also my responsibility to try and do something to create a clearer path for the women coming up behind me. And recognizing that all the changes that I want to see in the world for women probably are not going to happen while I'm still alive. But at least I can start the process, or continue the process that was started by my ancestors, and maybe start another process. So it is about, isn't it, that collective tipping point of femininity, feminine strength around the world. And that's how we leave a part of our legacy for the women who are coming up behind us.
Yes, you know, and the thing is that never to lose hope.
Yeah, never to lose hope. Absolutely.
And that is part of my narrative, that, you know, I always end everything on a positive note. And I say, look, you have to elevate yourself rather than bringing down another.
Yes.
And that is my life philosophy, you know, because only if you have that philosophy can you succeed in life. You can, you can actually turn the joke around and say that it's okay, you know, tomorrow is another day, you know, and I'll still continue doing what I'm doing, because it's divorce is still stigmatized. It is not an easy path that I've chosen, but I don't know, I feel the path has chosen me, so I have no choice. I continue working towards destigmatizing divorce, is what I say, and, you know, bringing about judicial reforms, continue writing and putting together women's lives together, you know, through encouraging them to work, to encouraging them to realize what is your value, what do you bring to the table, you know, and all sorts of tables, be it the corporate table, be it the table at home, because if the women are not, try running a house in India without the woman after 4 days, I mean, it'll be apart, like a roller coaster in Disneyland.
Vandana, we're out of time now, but a roller coaster in Disneyland is a great way to end. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy speaking with you. Thank you. This has been Katie Day with Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.